Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I'm here.
Here's John Williams.
No shutdown of GM. No humanitarian, national, or employment crisis at AM 720 WGN Radio. The president's going to address that tonight. We'll talk a little bit about that on the show, but not too much today, though I do have a question along those lines for you. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3. Remember, we're on Saturday mornings, too, from 10 a.m. till 12 noon on all social media, WGN King John. A lot of you digging our Insta story. No, it wasn't a story yesterday, but on Instagram and Facebook, we posted a series of pictures showing producer Elif as the Fiji water girl from the Golden Globes. I'm happy to announce that my wife broke out into laughter when she saw it yesterday. I said, "What are you looking at?" She said, "Oh, these pictures of Elif."
I love that I made her laugh.
I do, too. You know, you throw it out there, you don't know how things are being received. Brenda's a fan of us and the show and you, Elif, but, you know, I didn't know if anybody would get it or think it was funny, but Violetta and Elif went around and took a bunch of pictures of Elif distributing the Fiji water bottles and photobombing, if you will, the staff, much the way that now famous model did at the Golden Globes two nights ago. So props to you two. And remember, WGN King John, to see what we're doing here at WGN Radio and to interact with us. So I was driving west on Addison today, and I came up to a light, and as I was approaching the light, I noticed that the car in front of me was a beautiful blue four-door Jaguar. If I ever get enough money and I get to have a car, I'm going to get a Jaguar. It'll be in the shop all the time, because that's what Jaguars do. And an oil change will cost $400.
But you get a CD of a British guy telling you about the car.
You do?
Yeah.
You've been in a Jaguar with a British CD?
Yeah, my parents had a Jaguar. And, like, the CD that you pop in that tells you about the car?
Yeah.
It's just relaxing voice.
Nice. Of course, now they don't have, maybe they do. I will buy a Jaguar because I bought a car that didn't have a CD player, didn't know it, was really upset. I still want a CD player in my car. I think now the Jaguars come with the guy. He actually is in the car and he says, "So now we're going to switch gears," or something like that. So I'm looking at this beautiful vehicle, and as it guns it to go through the yellow light, because we were approaching I think we were over by Lane Tech.
Probably passing Western?
Yeah, we were in that neighborhood. We might have not been to that point. There's another school prior to that, but there were those yellow school zone signs. And he's going faster now to get through the yellow light, and he makes it, and I think I probably can too, and I didn't. So I went through the intersection with the camera, with the light red in a school zone, and I think there's a camera there. So maybe I'm going to get a ticket. And I thought the ticket was going to be about $300, because I think we really in Chicago crack down on people that are going through red lights in school zones. I think that's like a double whammy. I couldn't find the exact fine for Chicago in that regard. I found a variety of offenses that you shouldn't do, including this, but I couldn't find this one.
Yeah, I also looked up, and I had the city of Chicago on the line, but then they placed me on hold and I had to go. But I think it's about $100 fine.
I thought it was three.
And then it doubles if you have a late fee on it. But I don't think that the red lights are considered a school zone. So the school zones are required for the speeding cameras.
Okay, you don't think that
I don't think this, because it's...
I wasn't speeding, but I did go through a red light in a school area. You don't think that makes it worse? It's only the speeding that they double down on.
Right, and those speed cameras are most likely in a school zone because
right.
You're supposed to be going 25 miles per hour.
Here's what I did, and tell me if you do this. I was imagining the $350 ticket I was going to get. For instance, once I got pulled over by a cop in a construction zone, I was going like everybody else, but I'm the fish he pulled out of the pond. And he wasn't interested in my explanation that if I'd slowed down, I would have been more of a hazard than if I had gone with the flow. Anyway, you think, okay, here comes $350 out of my bank account. And then I think that, you know, you just hate that. You hate that. And one of the reasons that you're going to hate it even more is you start to think, how long or hard did I have to work to get $300? To get $350, right? Because that means you worked several hours. You may have worked a whole day, and now this cop just took the whole day's pay away from you because you were following a beautiful blue Jaguar through a yellow light, or you were going with the flow in a construction zone. My point here is about how much it cost. Because I was thinking, okay, say I'm going to get a $300 ticket in the mail. I can afford it, but it's really going to be lousy. Do you do the math? Do you think how many hours did I just lose of work? Like, I went to work for 7 hours, and now I'm not going to get paid for 7 hours because I have to give it to the city or the state. I do that when I get a speeding ticket or a construction ticket or whatever.
I add them all up, and then I'm like, what else could I have done with this money?
Totally. And then I,
it but, hurts.
But I segued to this, Violetta. I thought, okay, but I make enough money that as much as that's a bite in my butt, I'll survive that. Suppose I was one of those people making $15 an hour. If I was making $15 an hour, that would be 20 hours of work. That would be half a week's pay. Half a week's pay. Think about that. That is not fair to somebody who is making $15 an hour. It may be fair to me, but that's not fair to them. Do you see how the penalty isn't even? It's not a fair penalty for the two of us.
But
I can afford it. They can't. It
is. So you want a graduated penalty system?
I do. And the way to fix that would be to say, okay, John, for you, the fine will be $900. I don't think that's a good solution because I don't think my crime's commensurate with $900. What I think is, say it's a $300 offense for me, it should be a $75 offense for somebody making $15 an hour. Now, you're not going to like that because if you're lucky enough to be able to afford a $300 ticket, you go, well, these other people, they don't even care because they're not going to pay the fine I'm going to pay. They're not. But I would rather them pay less than you and I pay more if we're lucky enough to be in whatever the brackets are, right? But we have graduated income taxes. And when you think about, and this is something that ProPublica has been writing about a lot in the city of Chicago. And that is, if you don't have a vehicle sticker, if your car gets booted for some reason, how expensive it is. If your car gets towed to the city impound lot, it's very expensive to get it back. And some people can't afford it.
Yes.
And then the fines double. The storage starts to increase, and they go down that hole. They can't get out.
But then imagine two people that are in the same bracket, and one person continues to get tickets, and one never has. So, I mean, like, my mother has never gotten a ticket. She's never gotten a speeding ticket, a parking ticket, nothing. Me, on the other hand, I've had some issues. So, and we can both afford the ticket, but my mom is a better citizen by not getting the ticket.
So the penalty isn't working for you.
Well, I don't think the penalty is working on anyone that's getting it. I mean, if you
don't
have the money.
You don't think so? I think the $300 ticket.
But if you don't have the money to pay for it, then why did you continue to speed and get three more to get your? It takes a lot to get your car booted.
Well, I had two tickets within a year, one in Indiana, one in Ohio, during my traversing of the Midwest, and that absolutely had an impact on my driving.
It does on me.
I was scared to death I was going to get a third one.
Me too, absolutely, Steve. Me too. I mean, I'm so conscientious about construction zones.
And you can
zones.
Probably afford the ticket, but you're still reacting.
Still don't
to
want
the
to pay $300.
But you'd lose. I think after three, you could lose your license.
I think the monetary penalty is sufficient too. Forget about losing your license, although that's part of the continuum, say. But I think the financial aspect burdens people enough that they do learn their lesson. They do slow down. Violetta doesn't, but I think a lot of people do.
No, but then your graduated ticket doesn't make sense. Why are the people continuing to get tickets?
Well, I'm not saying it's perfect, but I'm saying that, do you agree with me that a person making $15 an hour, a $300 fine, is disproportionately unfair to them? That's not a reasonable ask for somebody who makes a simple mistake and they're making $15 an hour. You tell that person, hey, you're going to work Monday, Tuesday, and half of Wednesday, and you're not going to get any money.
But very few fines start at $300. So I could see the penalties for things doubling should be more fair. So let's say we get a $100 ticket and, well, I don't have $100 to pay the ticket, so I'm going to avoid it for a month. Then the next month comes and I only pay $25 towards it, whatever the case might be. That doubles quickly to $200 and yeah. then even $300.
Well, that's...
So maybe the fine shouldn't double, but the actual penalty for doing the crime, it's supposed to deter people from continuing to do it, but if they continue to do it even when they don't have the money.
Okay, well, that's fair enough, Violetta. You don't love my idea of a graduated
The fine, I don't think should be, but the increase should.
Okay, fair
enough.
I don't
think it should increase for people that already can't afford the first
ticket. Well,
you're
on my bus, but you're not all the way with me then, and I'll accept that. But I am sympathetic for reasons I don't entirely understand, but I was just thinking about that a lot today. And we've had this conversation when we visited with some of the reporters that have been covering this for ProPublica in the city of Chicago. And I thought today I'm going to get a big ticket and I have $300. I know people who don't. And I just felt like that was unfair. Lots of texts and calls about this. John, a whole day? John, $300 for some people, that's a whole week. John, get a Tesla. I don't know what my having a Tesla has to do with me.
You'll glide through the intersection next time.
Will it not notice? No, John, I don't believe in running a red light. I don't either. And some people who make $15 an hour don't either. And now they have an enormous ticket and it's not fair to them. John, in Warrenville, it's $100 for a red light camera. Hey, John, I'm with you. Need a CD player in cars. So I will drive my Subaru Outback 2015 until it or I no longer function. Yes, John, I would like to have a CD player in my 2017 Buick Envision. I miss having a CD player. When I get to be king, these new fancy cars, I bought a 2017 last year. It's a fine vehicle. It's a midsize SUV. I paid about $25,000, $28,000 for it. It's a swell car. Does not have a CD player. I did not know that until I almost broke a CD trying to jam it into the radio. Dear King John, Jaguars are much better cars than they've ever been. They have the reliability closer to a Lexus nowadays. Thank you, Scott. Didn't know it. I'll go out and buy one. John, it cost me $671 plus necessary attorney fees. I'm a paralegal, so I got a professional discount, and the attorney cost me $400. That's not fair. It should be proportionate. Yes, John, that's exactly what I do, and I barely make $100 a day. $100 a day. $100 a day? Well, at $8 an hour into $100, yes, that's the kind of money some people make. It's a 121. Oh, we have a lot of phone calls. Okay, I'll stop talking. You'll get your turn next on WGN.
Here he comes. Here comes Speed Racer. He should be.
I was not speeding. I ran a red light. That's different.
Worse.
It's not good. It's not good. But it was the damn blue Jaguar's fault. I was admiring that vehicle as he went through the yellow light, and the next thing I know, I was not.
Well, and moving violations are a little bit more you have to think while you're driving. It's also the parking stuff.
It's almost not fair.
Well, I didn't go that far, but it is a split-second decision sometimes, so... Sometimes you catch a little yellow and a little red.
Yeah. Well, if you catch a little yellow and a little red, it's a yellow. If you catch a red, it's a red. I caught the red. By the way, Producer Elif, the news click yesterday at WGNradio.com. We ask a daily web poll question. We want your answer to it. Yesterday, the news click question was, first and foremost, here's what I say about Bears kicker Cody Parkey. And we gave you four emotional options, if you will. The one that got 50% of the votes was, he didn't lose the game, the team did. In fact, only 9% of you said Cody Parkey lost the game for us. 35% said it was a tragic loss, but what a great season. And 6%, and probably including our own Kevin Powell, said, I'm sorry, I can't talk about this right now. 50% said he didn't lose the game for us. The team did. We have a new news click question. Here it is. Producer Elif, are you ready? Yes or no? She says no. We'll pick up a couple of phone lines. Let's go to John on line 3. John, you're on WGN. Hi. Or pardon me, Joe, you're on WGN. Hi, Joe.
I was going to say, we're backwards here. I was saying, John, that maybe everybody should pay the same fine. But if you can't afford to pay the fine, you can work it out with public service.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes it better for, you know, the people who can't afford it. But I also wanted to say, you staring at that car was distracted driving, John.
I know. That's the new drunk driving, distracted driving. That's the worst kind of person, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, busted. Thank you for the call, Joe. John, on line one, you're on WGN. Hi, John, you're on the air.
How you doing, John?
Good.
Hey, man, about a year ago, I'm traveling from Hammond, Indiana, through Midlothian about 4 in the morning, going to meet a buddy to go to work. I'm doing about 59 and a 30, all right? I know I'm speeding big time, right?
Yeah.
I get pulled over. As soon as I get pulled over, the cop comes up to me, takes my license, I give my stuff, I figure I'm getting a ticket. He comes up to the car, he tells me to get out of the car. I said, I wasn't drinking, I'm going to work. He goes, get out of the car. He says, put your head towards your car, put your head down, put your hands on your back. I don't know what's happening. He puts the handcuffs on, says, I'm going to jail. He says, there's a law in Illinois now since 2011 called aggravated speeding. You immediately go to jail if you're over a certain amount of miles of the speed limit.
Yeah.
So I was over 26, I think it was 26, something like that.
Yeah.
And he took me to the Midlothian police station. He took my mugshot, he took fingerprints, and the only reason I didn't go to jail is because he let me I bond out. It cost me $750 to get my car backed out, another $400 in court costs, and I never even knew about that law.
And do you still speed?
All the time.
Don't say that, because I was just going to say, people do learn their lessons financially, but I don't know what you make, but boy, that sounds like a lot of money to me, and that probably was a real bite in your life, wasn't it?
Well, I'm a union sprinkler fitter, so I make $50 an hour. It was a bite, because the biggest bite was when I got home and my wife yelled at me. I don't care about the money. It was getting reprimanded by the old ladies.
Yeah, and worse yet, wait till your wife finds out. That was the...
Oh, that was the one reason I didn't want to go home. I'm like, I'm going to get my ass beat.
You drive safe, my friend. Thanks for the call.
But imagine if the fine was even less, and that wouldn't hurt even as much. You know, I mean, you don't learn your lesson unless hopefully the finances are hurting a little bit.
I think they should hurt a little bit. I think it should be, but it doesn't hurt a $300 ticket doesn't hurt a person making $100,000 as much as it does somebody making $15 an hour or somebody making $500,000. I mean, you have all of those cars sharing the same space, but the fines are the same for all of them, and I don't think they should be. By the way, about the last call, the aggravated speeding or excessive speeding law, I didn't tell the previous caller, Joe, about this, but...
You mean John's law?
That's a law in Illinois because of this radio show.
Thank you.
Several years ago, I was in a neighborhood and a car was speeding by so fast, I said, that should be attempted murder. If that guy who was speeding through my neighborhood, I don't remember exactly what street it was. I was living in LaGrange Park at the time. Matt Bubala, who hosts the show here on weekends, was my producer. And I said, if there had been a child or another car or a bicycle, there's a number of instances. But sometimes we all speed. But if you're speeding so fast in a neighborhood, you could kill somebody, and you're just getting away with it because you're lucky. If we catch you, it's not a speeding ticket. It should be attempted murder. I think I told Lou Lang this. And whoever the representative was, he said, I've got a point. He didn't think it should be attempted murder. But he said, we'll have an excessive or aggravated speeding fine, and it will be greater. And at the signing, Governor George Ryan sat in his office downtown Chicago. Andrea Darlis went there to cover it for the radio station. Matt Bubala and I were there at the signing. We all looked thrilled. George Ryan did not. I don't know why. He just didn't seem to appreciate our company. Maybe he'd heard my show. So that was signed into law because of what we talked about here on this radio station, which I thought was a great example of democracy, right? It wasn't a real power play by me. I'd like to think anybody could do that. You call your representative, say, I've got a point here. They convince legislators. It's just like I'm Just a Bill from Schoolhouse Rock. That happened. However, the last caller had to pay the price of that. Sorry about that. It's time for WGN Radio News. Oh, and by the way, before we get done with the show today, we'll visit with the University of Chicago researcher who was part of the people talking about that new planet they've discovered, which may have water on it. And if they have water on it, then they've probably got a Starbucks. We'll talk to her about that before the show is over. We'll also preview the president's speech tonight. Did you notice the front page of both of the papers today? The Tribune and the Sun-Times had headlines and photos that were still about...
Bear-like?
Yeah. Deflection, doinks, and reflection. And the Sun-Times had a pun on their front page. Today's Tuesday, by the way, January 8th. I think we'll be talking about it Wednesday. Tomorrow we'll have a sports psychologist on to talk about the teachable moment that the missed field goal by Cody Parkey was.
Are you serious?
100%.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm just watching people, and I was watching all the fan reactions, and, you know, I'm not the sports fan I used to be, I guess, but I just don't have that. I mean, people were in agony, and it's hard for me to understand how someone, I mean, I'm bummed.
Yeah.
I'm a Marquette fan. I'm bummed when they lose in the first round of the tournament every year, but I'm not in agony, you know?
Yeah, I am when my team loses, and I think what I learned yesterday is what a Bears fan I am and I'm not. Kevin, who does sports, you hear him on with Rose Show mostly here on WGN Radio, you know, I was teasing him and I felt bad about it because he was really despondent yesterday. He was angry and he was hurt. That's his honest emotion. That's where he was. He wasn't playing, although he was a little bit, but he felt really bad. I didn't feel really bad, but when Butler loses a close game, I'm inconsolable for a day.
Really?
Yes. That day, like, Brenda and I were talking about it because they won their game and they played at 11. She said, well, it's nice because then you have the rest of the day to enjoy. I said, yeah, but if they lose, then I don't enjoy the rest of the day. Better they play late in the day because then my mood doesn't swing.
So the Cubs get knocked out in that, you know, play-in game or whatever it was. And so were you down for...
No. Because as much as I know this...
That's not your team. Like
it's not my team. I don't feel that.
Butler's your team.
You know what I did last night? I taped and watched again the DePaul game, the last game DePaul played. I so enjoyed that. I thought, I'm going to watch that again.
You rewatched it?
Well, because I knew how it was going to turn out. And so it was so much more enjoyable when you watch a game whose outcome you know.
That's really weird.
Thank you. Now, remember yesterday we spent considerable time here talking about this Bird Box phenomenon and Netflix numbers and the authenticity of the whole campaign and the numbers that they were offering. Jason Nathanson, the ABC News entertainment correspondent, said today that Nielsen is backing up Netflix, saying a massive amount of people watched the Sandra Bullock movie Bird Box in week one, which is it's just so timely, Jason. Welcome back to WGN, because we called BS on that and did a whole segment about it yesterday. I didn't think 45 million people could have watched Bird Box by December 28th. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. And in that original tweet, they said that 45 million people watched it. That's of their global subscribers of about 150 million. So almost a third of their subscribers, they say, watched it. And when they say watched it, they said watched 70% of it. That's what they clock as a watch, at least on Bird Box. So 70%. And I have to imagine if somebody watched 70% of it, they probably watched the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
That also doesn't count into a fact that most people, a lot of people just chill and watch Netflix by themselves. A lot of people watch it with family members. They watch it with friends. A movie like Bird Box probably was watched by several people in one sitting. So yeah. I have to imagine the number is actually probably higher. But today we got numbers from Nielsen. Now, it should be said, Netflix does not release numbers on how many people watched anything. So that's why we were all surprised by when they said that 45 million people had watched it. They don't release those numbers. Nielsen and other companies have tried to track the Netflix numbers before, and they've come out with their numbers, and Netflix has said, no, that's not true. But Netflix is out today, and they're saying in the U.S., 26 million people watched it in that first week alone. And so if you're looking at 45 million globally, that's what Netflix says, 26 million in the U.S., that seems to be a number that would correlate and back up what Netflix said, because that would just they would just need another 20 million or so around the rest of the world to have watched it. So it's looking like, that. Yeah, this is a massive, massive hit for Netflix.
That's still hard to believe. I mean, we're used to numbers like 10 million or 20 million watch the Super Bowl or an episode of Friends or whatever, but 26 million is about one in every 12 or 15 Americans. That's just, I didn't. So a friend of ours here at the radio station, Jason, went around and started to ask people online, in person, any way he could. And he reached 47 people. And he said, did you watch it? And about 8 of them did. I know that's anecdotal, but it just seemed to us like that's probably not. So here's the question, I guess. Why is Netflix so coy about its numbers?
Because they don't need to bow down to any kind of pressure when it comes to subscribers or when it comes to advertisers or anything like that, which is usually why we get numbers from the networks, because advertisers are involved and they want people to know how many people are watching their product so they know how to price it when it comes to ads. For Netflix, it's just subscribers, and it really doesn't matter to them to let the rest of us know how many people watch stuff, because as long as people are subscribing and subscribers are up and they're doing good business on that, those numbers are for their own internal use, and they just don't want to share it, except when they do want to share it,
yeah.
Which is when they release the Bird Box numbers. And, quite frankly, it's something that drives a lot of us in this industry crazy, because we want to know what to cover, but we also want to know what people are watching, so we know how to cover stuff, and we know what to cover, because if nobody's watching something, then with so many shows out there, there's more than 450 scripted shows on television right now. That includes Netflix and the other streaming services. We just don't have time to focus on everything. And Netflix is dropping on us sometimes up to 9 or 10 new things every week. So we need to know where to focus our stuff, where the audience is, what people are paying attention to. And when Netflix isn't giving us that information, it makes it really hard. Now, something can drop on Netflix and become a big hit, and you know it is because people are talking about it, like Fuller House or Orange is the New Black, The Kominsky Method just winning a Golden Globe for Netflix. So people are watching those things and talking about those, so we know how to cover those. But with a lot of their stuff, we have no idea how many people are actually watching.
Yeah, which makes you then suspicious of them and their methods, but the irony is the stuff they put out, the content is so good these days, both on Netflix, Amazon, etc. I mean, there's just so much terrific content out there right now.
I mean, there is, and it's overwhelming for the viewers, and that's where people like me and those in my industry come in, because we can kind of help sift through that and point out and highlight some of the stuff that might be worth your time or not worth your time. And if we don't know who's watching or how many people are watching stuff, it makes it a little tough to do that, but at the end of the day, you know, we can only watch so much, we can only review so much, so we try to keep up with it, but there's so much out there. If you feel overwhelmed at home,
yeah.
Imagine, you know, my inbox is full right now with screeners of shows I'm never going to get to.
It's funny, too, because we're so impatient. So Brenda and I plowed through The Bodyguard and loved that series, but I think it was only 6 about hour-long episodes, so we were able to consume that in a couple of nights. That could have been, you know, a month and a half the way TV shows used to be consumed. So now we're like, okay, we need another series to plow through. So we found The Night Watchman, I think it was called, and that was terrific, and we had that like a snack. So now we, you know, our appetite is as voracious as the content is that's coming out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there was a time when the 6 episodes you mentioned of Bodyguard, that is a British model. They usually do 6 episodes for their series. They did that, remember, for the original Office. It was 6 episodes and so many other things. And there was a time where I'd be like, you know, I want more. I want, because we're used to in the U.S. on a network show, you get 22 episodes a year. Something around that,
yeah.
And you love it. You love watching all the episodes, and you know you really feel connected to a show when you watch so many episodes. So when you only get 6, you feel a little cheated. But in this day and age, 6 episodes seems like that's a great number, because there's so much to watch. You can't possibly watch 22 episodes of something and keep watching, you know, 10, 15, 20 different shows. So 6, I actually like 6 when we have just 6 episodes to watch these days, although you do feel a little bit cheated because when you get to the end, you want more.
Yeah. 6, 7, 10 is a nice number for me. 22 does seem bloated in a way. A couple of other entertainment topics that Jason Nathanson is writing and talking about, the ABC News entertainment correspondent, and another one of them is Kevin Hart. What's the status of the possibility that he'll host the Oscars?
almost zero at this point. He talked a little bit more yesterday on his SiriusXM talk show, Straight from the Heart, and addressed the controversy again. He apologized again. He said he made it very clear he wants to apologize for his remarks that hurt the members of the LGBTQ community. He said, again, he reiterates, I apologize. But when it comes to actually doing the show, he said, I don't have time to prepare and do it correctly at this point. And the microscope, he said, on him is so thick that they're looking for everything. So anything that he says that's not appropriate, that's wrong, he says, you're going to pick me apart. So at this point, I don't think it's something that he wants to do or feels he has the time to do. So we're wondering who's going to host the Oscars at this point. It's a little over a month away, and they don't have a host, and it's looking more and more like they're not going to have a host. They might just use a lot of the famous people that are going to be in the audience to present and do little bits and things like that, and we won't have one singular host.
What did you think of Andy Samberg and Sandra Oh at the Golden Globes?
They were fine. The thing about the Golden Globes is usually we turn to that for something a little racier. If you think of the days of Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, Ricky Gervais as a host, I really liked those. And they were playing to us in the audience, those of us watching at home and watching it on the screen. Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg seemed to be playing to those in the room. So they were a lot nicer, a lot gentler. There were some funny remarks, but I like it when it gets a little racy and, you know, they skewer Hollywood a little bit. I think a lot of us at home like that. So it was a little too tame for me, and it wasn't something that necessarily popped. But the ratings were good, and I've long said you can't really base the host isn't to blame or really to take credit for the ratings. The ratings for the Golden Globes were good. They did not go down, which is a positive in this year. Because if you look at last year, the Oscars and the Grammys both lost somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 million viewers year over year. And some could say that has to do with politics, the show's getting so political. I think it has to do more with what we were just talking about, the fact that there's just so much on TV, and the way people watch TV and watch things has changed. Viewer habits have changed. So people are watching fewer and fewer things like award shows and big things like that. We've seen that in football as well. The number of people watching has gone down as well. And some could say that's political too, but I think mostly it has to do with viewing habits.
Hmm. Chris Rock, was he interested in doing the Oscars?
I don't know if he was interested or they approached him after the Kevin Hart thing or not, but he said last night he was at the New York Film Critics Circle. He was presenting an award, and he got up there and kind of riffed, and he noticed Steve Martin in the crowd, and he said, oh, Steve Martin is here. You should host the Oscars. You're the best. And he said, because I'm not doing it. You're not getting me.
Fair enough.
So he's not going to do it. He's done it twice before, and especially in this climate when, like Kevin Hart, everything gets picked apart. It's tough for a comedian to get up there, and you don't want to say something that some people are going to take the wrong way.
Well, and so Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg went the other direction, and their shtick was how nice they were. Their cutting remarks were, you know, fantastically kind, and that was supposed to be funny, but I think that shtick got old really quick because it just wasn't funny enough. I'm not pining for the days of Ricky Gervais, but you mentioned his name. And remember how awful he was and how scandalously funny and fun it was. But I don't know that we have an appetite for that right now either. You know, I don't know what tone a presenter should take.
You're right, and that's why nobody wants to do it, because they don't know either. We're in a different climate. We're in a different day and age right now where Ricky Gervais could not host a show because it would just every single thing he said would get picked apart. And but you also have to remember that just because a lot of people say something on Twitter doesn't mean a lot of people are really actually mad about it. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on people right now when there's a lot of Twitter comments, or, you know, it seems like there's a mob after somebody. Sometimes there really isn't. So, you know, it's just that you're right. It's a different climate in this day and age.
Yeah.
And that makes
yeah.
it very tough for anybody to want to take on the task of hosting a show like that.
All right. So we'll see what happens with the Oscars. Maybe it won't have a host, but just some sort of hybrid of people getting up there and presenting. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Jason Nathanson, ABC Entertainment reporter. Thanks for some of your time today.
Sure thing. Take care.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Triangulate.
Here's John Williams.
Given bad information.
Oh, I get it. First minus one and then minus two.
Thank you.
I don't think that pattern was evident. There's a number of patterns that were available to us there. Anyway, it's 2:08, and we're in the Allstate Showcase Studio till 3. Saturdays, 10 to noon on social media, we're... WGN King John on social media, WGN King John. We started the show with my describing how if you get a ticket for $300 because you've committed some egregious driving offense in a city, it should be less if you're a low-income wage earner. And we got a lot of texts about that, including this one. Hey, John, I got a 2017 Kia. It didn't have a CD player either. I didn't know that till I bought it. It made me mad. Yeah, they should put that right on the sticker. I've been there. I've done that. It's heartbreaking to get in a car you pay good money for, and now they don't come with CD players. Thank you for that, John. I've been saying that business about the graduated fines for people with less income for years. Whoever I told that to thought I was nuts. John, I think Sweden has the amount of ticket is based on your income. I believe that is true. Hey, John, not everyone makes WGN money after taxes and health care. I bet most people make less than $100 a day. That'd be $12.50 an hour net if you are working 8 hours. And, well, that was my point. Some people make enough money that $300 is painful, but it's not ruinous. And too many people make so much less than $100,000. So many people make $15 an hour that a $300 ticket for all of us is not fair to them.
But you can avoid getting a ticket by following the law.
It's not my point. John, it's not good to watch a sporting event when you know the outcome. I said I like taping games and then watching them afterwards. I'll watch a Butler basketball game two or three times. I've watched the last DePaul game twice. It's pleasant each time. Watch the Bears game again tonight, John, and tell me how enjoyable it was. Well, I don't watch the losses again. Those aren't fun, but it's really relaxing. You should try this.
I can't imagine ever spending any of my time watching a game a second time.
I don't think...
Unless it's like 10 years later.
Oh, no. I'd say more than half of the Butler basketball games I watch at least once. And I'll bet I'm not alone on this.
No, say that again. You rewatch at least once?
At least half of the games I watch more than once.
So, okay. So, right. So, but you don't ever watch a game three times. Please tell me no.
Oh, sure I will. If it's a really good game and there's nothing else on, I'll go back and go, wow, remember the Creighton game? Let's look at that. It brings me joy to see my guys hit shots. And if they win, it's just so... Think about
how... Well, don't say if they win, because you know if you're watching it again...
Sometimes I forget. But actually, no. Yeah, right. But so you know they're going to win. There's nothing else on TV. Watching games whose outcomes you don't know and that we sometimes lose, it's so unpleasant. Witness the Bears game. But if the Bears had won that game, I'll bet a lot of people would have gone back and thought, let's do that again. Channel 9 would replay playoff games that the Cubs won when that used to be a novelty.
Yeah, or during a rain delay for another game. You need to get Hulu yourself.
The news click today at WGNradio.com is asking you if you agree with the president. He's going to talk about this tonight, that we have a crisis at the southern border. A is yes and B is no. Some of you are just texting A, 630, A, unnamed from 630. I vote A. Somebody else from 773 said B. John, another person from 708 says, I vote B on your poll question. We don't have a crisis at the border. It's funny because the president is now using humanitarian. When he was pitching it on the campaign trail and he said he'd build the wall, he didn't say to avert the humanitarian crisis. Or maybe as the caravan came through, the humanitarian crisis evolved, but he wasn't talking about that. He was talking about the rapists and the criminals and the traffickers and the smugglers that were coming through. But now they've started to throw in humanitarian crisis. We have a security and humanitarian crisis. Humanitarian is the word that pops up a lot. Watch, you're going to hear that word more tonight than you ever have come out of the president's lips. I don't think we have a humanitarian crisis at the border. I don't think we have a security crisis at the border. You know, I think we're all quibbling about the wrong word. The quibble should be over the word crisis. Do we have a problem with people getting in illegally? Yes. Is that a humanitarian catastrophe for the people that it affects? Yes. Has it risen to crisis level? Somebody needs to define for me crisis. Because to me, crisis carries a certain weight. It's large. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of something. And I don't think we have a lot of anything at the southern border. I do not know one person. I know I live in Chicago, but I heard an interview with the mayor of one of the Texas cities that this directly affects, and he said, we don't want the wall. I don't know one person in our audience that is directly affected by this. How is it a crisis?
He needs to use the term crisis if he's going to hold over this idea of declaring a national emergency.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another word.
The thing that is frustrating to me is we all, I mean, the administration will talk about problems like heroin coming over the border or opioids coming over the border. And that is a problem. Both sides can agree on fixing that because they come over at border crossings. You know, there's the sacks of heroin aren't strapped on the backs of mules swimming across the Rio Grande. They're hidden in trucks.
Okay, so we do have a problem with this stuff coming across the border.
And we have ways to fix it. And there's technology. I keep going back to Durbin, saying there's ways to increase technology and detection at the border crossings.
Yeah, he made that point on Sunday with Margaret Brennan. I'll tell you something about that, by the way. In fact, let me just play for you. Hey, Producer Elif, can you pull up the audio of Dick Durbin from Sunday when she was on, what is that, Meet the Press on CBS? She's talking to Margaret Brennan. And I think this is where Durbin showed his hands. And, you know, I'm a Dick Durbin fan. He comes on this station a lot. If nothing else, he's very soundbite friendly. But I think he showed why we're in an impasse. And it's as much the Democrat fault as is the Republicans' fault when he said this.
If we're talking about border security, the overwhelming number of undocumented people in the United States overstayed visas. Mm-hmm. They did not cross the border. The solution to that is not a concrete wall. It's a computer program that needs to track these people who have received the visas.
It sounds like you're saying you would be open to more border funding if it was spent in a different way. Could you get to that $5 billion number?
I don't see that. But I will tell you, we've offered $1.3 billion with very specific limits, which would not include a concrete wall.
See what I mean?
No, so not really. I don't.
One of them is at $5 billion. The other is at $2 billion. The difference is trivial. She said, well, would you give him $5 billion if it was for these other methods? And he said no, because it's a victory. They're not going to give Donald Trump. We have the money. They're not going to do it. By the way, $5 billion doesn't build the wall anyway. It builds 234 miles of the wall in Texas. They're not going to give him the money because they don't want to give him a victory. She said, well, what if you gave him $5 billion, but instead of a wall? I'm extrapolating, but not much here. She said, what if you gave him the money and you spent it the way you want for computer programs? He said, no, I don't see that. He won't give him the money because he doesn't want Donald Trump to crow about $5 billion.
I think you're right. They don't want to give him that figure, but I also think you're extrapolating a lot. I mean, you could also have him say, no, I don't think we need that much. Right? I don't think we get there. At one point, whatever he said, billion would do it.
Yeah. 1.2 or 1.3 billion? You know, I don't know. Do you know? Does anybody know? I mean, how much money does a computer program cost to implement and track people coming across the border, legally and otherwise? I don't know what we're talking about, and you don't either. I think the only thing any of us know, I don't mean you, Steve.
No, I don't.
But I think all of us generally don't. None of us knows.
I know the numbers are down.
I know. Yeah, I know that too. And I know that the president and Sarah Sanders, and for that matter today, Mike Pence, are fudging the numbers when they say we had 4,000 people come in illegally and then they weren't clear on the parameter. Was it a day, a week, a month, a year? And then Chris Wallace said, well, 4,000 people, most of them overstayed their visas. That wasn't people coming across the border illegally. She said, well, it's by land and sea and air. And now she's massaging the message. I wish somebody would just be straight up with us about these things.
There was reporting yesterday that of the people stopped at the border crossing, that there were six that were questionable or on watch lists.
Yeah, right.
In the first 6 months of last year.
Oh, is it that few?
Yeah, not that they were terrorists, but that they were on watch lists, six.
So what are we going to do about that? And the president's going to talk about it tonight. The NewsClick at WGNRadio.com is asking you if we have a crisis at the border. We have something at the border. I don't think it's a crisis. I'm really interested in how you feel about that. It's on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Vote with your mouse or go to WGNRadio.com and we'll report your responses there. Here in Chicago, there's a scientist at the University of Chicago who has something to say about the fact that the galaxy that you're in right now, the galaxy you're in right now, the Milky Way, is going to collide. And the headline is, sooner than you think, with another galaxy. So what are you going to do, move your car? I mean, here comes another galaxy. What's happening? In a minute. By the way, a text has just poured in. Moments ago, I said that I like to watch sporting events whose outcome I know and like because it's so much easier to enjoy them. The other night after, I think, the Bears game, I stayed up late and I watched DePaul beat Seton Hall for a second time. It wasn't all that satisfying a win because it was a one-point win. It should have been a five-point win. We almost blew it, but we didn't. Dave Leto's boys hung on. It was really fun to watch. A text is poured in from none other than Lou Manfredini, our Mr. Fix-It. Imagine that, him texting into the show. It said, John, you are alone in this. The only people that rewatch a sporting event more than once are the people that are coaching a team and trying to scout a team or learn from your team. Coaches might watch a game over again.
You do kind of think you are a coach, don't you?
Well, I'll tell you what, it helps me in the next game know what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are. Have we made improvements? I do watch it a little bit that way.
Our we.
And then, yes, sometimes I do text the coaches and go, hey, have you thought about a trapping defense? They can do with it what they want. And we could use an inbounds play under the basket, but never mind that. So did you see the story? They said that there's two things that I thought were pretty fascinating on the scientific front. One is that they found another galaxy is going to crash into this galaxy, you know, the Milky Way, like where you are. And they said that it's going to hit us sooner than thought. Instead of in 8 billion years, maybe in 2 billion years. So that's a misleading headline, perhaps. But still, imagine someday if mankind is still here and you go, wow, it's not an asteroid or a meteor. It's a flipping galaxy.
Build that wall.
I'm going to pause and let you enjoy that at home. And then the other thing they found is that here's kind of a misleading headline. They said, hey, great news. We found another exoplanet. That means a planet outside our solar system. And it's 1.9 times as large as Earth. So kind of in our neighborhood, but kind of big. And we think it might have water. And I'm like, well, this is great news. You know, I mean, they're not mad at each other there. Let's go there. Or maybe they could come here. They said it's like 225 light years away. Well, that doesn't do us any good. And is there really water there? And what would that mean? Incidentally, I looked it up. So here's what 225 light years means. Say you found out that there was life there and you go, hey, okay, let's send them a hello. So you say hello. It takes 225 years to get there. And then they say hello back and it's another 225 years. In fact, exactly, it would be 456 years for us to just say hello back and forth from them. You know what was happening 456 years ago here? Shakespeare wasn't even born. So even if we did find life there, had some way of knowing that they had McDonald's, we couldn't get there. They couldn't get here. We couldn't even communicate with a place like that. At least I think that's the case. Adina Feinstein is over at the University of Chicago and is quoted in some of the reporting on this. Adina, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you? Thanks so much for having me today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. What's your connection to this? How do you know about this story?
Yeah, so I was an intern at NASA Goddard last summer, and one of my co-interns, her project was searching through light curves for planet transits or signals from planets around other stars. And when she identified this light curve as hosting a new planet, I really pushed to have my advisor and I start doing follow-up, so additional observations to confirm that the planet was real.
So does this mean you guys are looking at a star, a sun, a zillion miles away, and if you see it wobble a little bit, you think, oh, I'll bet a planet is affecting the wobble, and therefore we know there's a planet. Is that what that means?
Yeah, so it's not so much a wobble. When I say light curve, what I mean is we observe the light from a star over a certain amount of time. And so if we see a dimming in the light, that means that a planet is passing between us and the star. So it's not so much of a wobble as it is a dipping.
I see. And then how are you able to know, you know, how big it is in water and stuff like that?
Yeah, so we don't actually know if there's any water on this planet. We know nothing about its composition. But in terms of planet parameters, the size of the dip can tell us how large the planet is, so the radius of it. If we wanted to go and learn about the composition of the planet, we would have to measure its mass, which is done through radial velocity follow-up, which we have not done yet.
Yeah, we all knew that. So then what's the value of something like this? I mean, it would be fascinating to know, say you discovered a lot about it and were optimistic about the chances of life. I mean, what does that mean to you, or should that mean to me?
Yeah, so the value of this particular planet is, as you mentioned before, it's 1.9 times the radius of Earth. And these planets are actually very uncommon. And it's not a size planet that we have in our own solar system. And so planets of this size, if we go and measure their mass and learn about their composition, actually tells us about how planets form and more about if planets are around two times the size of Earth, are they more like super Earth, or are they rocky with thin atmospheres, or are they more like mini Neptune, so a large gaseous atmosphere that wouldn't actually be able to host life. So it's interesting because these planets are so rare, and our solar system does not have a planet that falls within this gas.
It is fun to fantasize about a sort of Eden-like green space with fish and maybe some higher beings, but they haven't polluted it, or they're not fighting about border walls, you know. Does your mind go there sometimes when you think about stuff like this?
Sometimes it does, yeah. It's always nice to think that somewhere out there, you know, everyone's living peacefully and happily, but we haven't seen any direct evidence for potential higher intelligent life out there, so it's nice to imagine, but then I have to bring myself back down to reality when I'm looking at the data.
Was there any place close enough to Earth that we could have actionable information, that is, communication or refuge? I mean, we have the nine planets or so in our solar system, but after that, there's no place near enough for us to be optimistic about along these lines, right?
Yeah, so the nearest planet that we have to Earth is a little too big for to potentially host life. But I think our best shot is actually on some of the moons in our own solar system. So places like Titan that have oceans, not necessarily water, on their surface. And also the moon Enceladus, which is believed to have a liquid water ocean under its icy surface.
Yeah.
So I think the best place to start looking is actually in our own solar system still.
It is pretty marvelous, though, that human beings can understand the things that you are talking about generally anyway, that a couple hundred light years away, which is unfathomable, that we might know the things that you're talking about. I mean, that's just so impressive to me.
Yeah, it certainly blows my mind every day that the stars I'm looking at are hundreds of light years away that we'll never actually be able to go to, but we can still understand so much about them from here.
And is my analogy right that the communication itself would sort of defy its own purpose, because the people that, if you say hi and they say hi back, by the time they say hello back, you're dead?
Yeah, that's correct, unfortunately.
Yeah. Bummer. So are you at the U of C, or where are you now?
Currently, I am at the meeting of the American Astronomical Society in Seattle, Washington. And I will return to U of C in a week and return to my classes.
Are you a teacher there, or are you a student there? I understand you're a research assistant.
Yes, I am a student there. So I'm a master's student.
Fascinating. Well, is it Adina, A-D-I-N-A? Is that how we pronounce your first name?
Yeah, that's correct.
Adina Feinstein, it's nice to talk to you. Thanks for giving us some of your time today. Continued success, and I appreciate you joining us today on WGN.
Yeah, thanks so much. My pleasure.
Yeah, good for her. Good for us. Good for you. Go humanity. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline studio. You can hear this show Saturdays, or a version of it, from 10 a.m. to noon. And Remember that our social media platforms are WGN King John, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Search for me at WGN Radio King, at WGN King John. I think I'm throwing in too many words in our on our address there, in our handle. I said that we were going to talk after the news, and it's actually at this time tomorrow that we'll be talking about what they're doing in Indiana. Remember that school bus incident where the three kids were killed, a car was going around a bus, the kids stepped out and were all hit and killed. It was a terrible thing. It was a young woman that was driving the vehicle. They're changing the laws in Indiana about that now, and they're going to make the penalty more severe. That kind of reminds me of what we started talking about on the show today, and that is, you know, do penalties deter and what should the appropriate penalties be? That conversation, what they're doing in Indiana to make travel around school buses safer tomorrow. In fact, Violetta and I were talking about this today because off the air, Violetta was telling us about how she was behind a school bus. I don't mean to tell your story. Is Violetta over there? Yeah, you are, V.
Yeah.
So what was the incident with you today?
Well, we were talking about just traffic incidences today since we had a couple. And I was behind a school bus, and the lady in front of me was also behind the school bus. And the school bus was pulled over. It had flashing yellow lights, but the stop sign was not out. And I was a little bit upset that the woman was waiting there because flashing yellow lights does mean you can pass the school bus using caution. Flashing red lights with the stop sign out means both sides of traffic have to be stopped while the kids get in and out of the bus. So it took a little bit longer.
Wait a minute. The bus stopped in front of the car in front of you.
It was pulled over slightly.
Sure, but there's a bus, and then the car in front of you is looking at this bus, and both of you see flashing yellow lights on the school bus.
Yes.
And you are anxious for this person to go around the bus so you can all proceed forward.
Not at high speeds, cautiously,
no,
but
no, no.
Yes.
Not in a million years would I do that.
Right.
You see, we don't know, Violetta. You know,
she's telling me that that's the case. And I said, are you sure? And she said, yeah, I'm sure. You can pass a bus as long as it doesn't have the arm out or the red lights flashing. I'm afraid to.
Yeah, I suspect you. I mean, I don't doubt you. And it seems like if they have an arm and the arm's not out, that means the arm doesn't apply. But, and again, look, if you do in Indiana, they're increasing the penalty. I don't know what I think they should spend the money on, is making it much clearer what people can do, or
right, educating the public.
Putting signs on every bus, do not, you know,
even if
stop
I have the,
now.
Even if I had the right of way, pardon me, Steve, but even if I had the right of way, it doesn't mean that the kids aren't going to violate the law themselves. I don't, even if I trust me and the bus, I don't know that I trust the children, right? What if
right,
one of
but
them...
But that bus was not loading or unloading children. So a school
in your
bus,
case, yeah.
Right, so a school bus being just pulled over with flashing yellow lights, that's the whole point, well, is there are kids in this area, but they're not being loaded on and off. So I don't know how long...
How did you know that? How did you know a kid wasn't getting off and wasn't about to come around the front of the bus in the way of traffic?
And why would the lights be flashing?
Doesn't that tell you caution, caution?
Because it's pulling over. It means caution. But red flashing lights and the red arm means that kids are being loaded and unloaded and you cannot cross at this moment.
So if you,
it's like having a yellow light and a red light. You cannot pass
that
right now, but a yellow light means you can, using caution, because you are in a school zone and there is potential for children to be around. So you come up to the bus, you look both ways, and you proceed slowly.
It's funny, with all the advances we've made in cars and technology, that we still rely on a bus driver to pull a lever,
yeah,
to put a little stop sign off the left side of the bus.
I hope you see it.
Why aren't there neon signs in the back or flashing LED signs, stop now, or, you know, children exiting, or things like that to make it clear to us? Because none of us really do know what the law is.
No, I don't. I don't. I mean,
if you're caught passing when you're not supposed to, when the red stop sign and red lights are flashing, your license can be suspended.
Well, here's what I think. I think, okay, maybe I can go. Right? It's yellow, like a yellow light. At a yellow light, when you're approaching an intersection, you can advance with caution. But some of us slow down, anticipating that it's going to be red. That's how I approach the flashing yellow light on a bus. I think, yeah, I'm not sure. Even if you told me it's okay to go, I would say, but I'm going to elect to not pass the bus.
But that bus was not changing its
position. You're not hearing
me.
You're not hearing me. All I'm saying is I'm nervous enough about the very proposition that I'm not going to do it anyway.
Right, but how long would you wait there? Because there's not going to be movement. on that bus.
Until school lets out for the summer.
I'm there now.
I'm saying at some point you need to actually know, you know, the reasoning behind the lights. And it really does come down to the bus driver also using the correct, you know, signals. Because what if he did only have yellow lights and did have kids exiting and entering the school bus? Then he's in the wrong for not having the stop sign.
And I'm going to take any possibility of the bus driver being wrong or the kids being wrong out of the equation. I'm not going to go around, which is going to be annoying to the people behind me.
Well, hey, not annoying, but you have to make a decision at some point.
I'm not going to go. And probably then I'm violating the law because people behind me want to proceed. Hey, Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, what did you want to say?
Violetta is absolutely right. The red light, the stop sign, do not engage unless you open the door. Yes, you can pass with caution when the yellow lights are on.
Is it okay to not pass with caution when the yellow lights are on, but just play it safe and sit there?
Sure.
Yeah. Kathy, thanks for the phone call. Which line is next via LF4? That is Jim, who is a bus driver. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Jim.
Hello, I'm on my way to work, and I'm driving with Bluetooth, so that's got make that official.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
I'm a bus driver, and I get people that drive around my bus while children exit the bus all the time. And there's flashing red lights, which is the same thing as a stoplight. So, when, like, the light's red, you stop.
Right, and I agree with that.
You agree that that's wrong, yeah, that's a problem. That
right.
People are going around the bus, even when the red lights are there.
But when you have a flashing yellow bus, what do you expect drivers behind you to do?
What do you expect people to do when there's flashing yellow lights on your vehicle?
Behind?
Yep.
Just sit and wait the 30 seconds.
Okay, but is it? But I may say I don't want to wait 30 seconds. I got to be somewhere. I can go around your bus if the lights are flashing yellow when you've stopped, right?
Correct. But as you approach a bus with flashing yellow lights, stop and then look to see if there's any kids. Because if there's no children, there's probably waiting for the children to come, or there's not any kids. So if you, pause a moment and give, you know, like, the situation to
right,
you to go.
Pass, but with caution. You stop for a second, and then you proceed if
all right, here's
no
what
children.
I'm going to do, Violetta. I'm going to stop my car, get out, walk to the front of the bus, go in, say hello to the bus driver, get a document notarized, get back in my car, and then idle forward as I inch around the bus. That's how careful I'm going to be. It'll take days.
It'll be safe, though.
Good for you to drive a school bus, sir. We need people to do that. It's my old producer would produce my show in Minnesota during the day, but in the morning she'd be up driving a school bus every day. So I got to know what the life of a school bus driver was like. And I know this, they're important people to the children on the bus. They develop relationships with them. They teach them, if nothing else, discipline and civility.
Daddy.
And it's important work you do. So thanks for calling, and good luck to you.
Thank you. And be patient with the school bus drivers, because it might not be your kid. It could be your neighbor's kid.
Yeah, amen to that. Okay, so we'll talk more about that tomorrow. They're changing the laws in Indiana about that. Elif, can you read for us the news click and catch us up on where we are on the news click at WGNradio.com? It's a daily web poll question. We post it on our website, and we also post it on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. How are we doing on this?
Calculating.
All right. She's getting it. Lots of texts about this. It's about the president's speech tonight. Hey, John. Trump is trying to deliver on a promise to his base about the wall he's going to talk about tonight. We're asking you, I forget exactly how it is, but A or B, do you think we have a crisis or not? John, I vote C on your poll question. I think it's a big problem, but I do not believe the wall is the solution. 847 said Dick Durbin should do the Democratic rebuttal on TV tonight. A big question this time yesterday was, should the networks all carry the president's speech? I don't know if it's because some of the mainstream networks don't like the president or because they don't trust or believe him. Mike Pence was out there throwing some facts out today, which were dubious at best again. So when the president is going to, as Pence said today, lay the facts out for the American people, you almost have to fact check it as they go because this administration has no credibility. You may love them and you may agree with them, but you've got to admit they're fluid with the facts. And so if the president's going to try and persuade us tonight that we have a humanitarian or a security crisis at the border, you really shouldn't trust him. Even if you're on his side, you have to wait and let the dust settle to find out what the truth of some of the facts are. Hey, John, the president points to the undocumented immigrant that shot the officer in California, but he fails to mention the shooters who do mass shootings who are mostly U.S. citizens. John, Trump's administration has zero credibility as a result of their fact checks. 269 said, take a look at the map of the U.S. The southern border is just a tiny portion of the unsecured border. Look at the areas to the west, north, and east. Well, two of those have oceans. I'm not worried about those. I'm not too worried about Canada. Frankly, I'm not worried about Mexico. I don't know if you caught the beginning of the show. My take on this is that we do have a humanitarian problem and we do have a security problem. I don't think any of it has risen to the case of crisis. Could the Democrats just throw a couple billion more in and have this problem go away? They could, but now they're ticked, their feelings have been hurt, and they won't do it. John, it's not our money. It's our great-great-great-grandchildren's money. You know, there's some truth in that. Do you got the numbers on the results? What are people saying so far, Elif?
A, I agree. Fund that wall, 12%. Hmm. B, this is not a security crisis, 88%.
You know, more of you 12%ers got to vote on these things. Our news clicks like this always favor the side that is not a fan of Donald Trump's policies. I know you're out there. WGNradio.com. Like the John Williams Facebook page. I'm WGN King John and vote with your mouse. Okay. Pause, says producer Elif. You want to chime in? I'll let you next on GN. David, it's John. You're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say?
Hey, I just wanted to make a comment about the criminals born and bred here. You know, that's really not much of an argument. You know, yes, we have criminals, murderers, they are. They originate from here. But there is no reason we should be importing them from another country. If we can stop them or minimize them, we need to do that.
Yeah. Nobody can argue with that. If we can keep criminals from coming into this country, we should do that. Absolutely. I think it's...
And, you know, a border wall is not the solution. It is part of a solution. You know, there's so many aspects to what we need to do to make sure the people who are coming in here are who they say they are, and they are going to be legal citizens when they get here. That's what we need to do.
Yeah, and find something to do with the, what is it, 20 million? What is the number of immigrants who are in this country illegally right now? That was where this conversation used to be. The DACA kids and all the undocumented immigrants that are in this country, we should resolve that too. You want to talk about something of crisis proportions? That's where the numbers are. It doesn't make a
difference. But, you know, I personally don't want to be the family who loses a family member to a violent crime by anybody, but you know, I don't want to lose it to an illegal immigrant either who shouldn't be here. That's what it boils down to. That person cannot commit a crime here if they are not here.
You understand.
And that's something I think people lose sight of.
You also understand, though, right, that the people that come into this country are less likely to commit a crime than the people that are here, that they are not as criminal as you and I and our friends are.
Well, it depends on the individual. I mean, stats are, you know, those are numbers, but it's the individual you have to look at.
And I know, I have
some good neighbors. One of them's from Mexico. One of them's from El Salvador. They're great people, the hardest working people I've ever known. They came here legally. They never asked for anything. They've worked hard. They've raised great kids. That's what it should be about. So I know not everybody here is bad. I mean, they're coming here. I understand that. But if there's, you know, if for every 15,000 people coming through the border illegally, if one of them's bad, we have an issue because they're going to do some damage to somebody, and, you know, it might be your family. That's the problem.
You know what, though? I think that we all get our head around the wall and the border, and we've focused on this crisis. But what if you and I also said, okay, 15,000 and only one of them is coming through, that's too many. But what if we said, oh, my God, there's actually a bigger problem at the airports or on the ships that are coming. People are coming into this country other ways, and they're doing so not at the wall, not at the border. They're coming through other ways.
They need to be checked, too. But we do know that when you're coming through airports, there is a level of security that basically is unmatched. It's unprecedented in our history right now. We are checking these people. I mean, people have passports. They're just not getting on an airplane, flying here, and walking off. They're being checked at different points. When you're crossing the Rio Grande River, that's not happening.
Hey, so the news click is, did you think we have a security crisis at the border? You're going to vote yes, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I appreciate your call, and I appreciate you listening, David. Thanks for tuning in.
Sure.
Yep.
No problem.
A good day now. You betcha. No, I give myself like a day. It's like my ace in the hole. I'm talking to Kevin Powell off the air, now on the air. I was telling him how I watch games twice if my team wins and it was a good game. So if it's like clicking around, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch that. Oh, I've already watched that. I'll watch the DePaul game. I just watch it again.
I love that.
I thought there'd be a lot of us out there. Evidently not.
My husband does that.
I'm glad. Okay, that's two now.
It's still weird.
He records every Packers game, and if they win, he rewatches it. If they lose, he doesn't.
Yeah, I almost watched every Bears game twice.
Except,
I don't want to talk about it.